Ben Fred Fridays, as always, it's presented by Blue Tail Medical Group. Great alternative to surgery. So if you're lined up to have surgery, before you do it, call the doctors Wolf, Bays, Crane at Blue Tail Medical Group. They're located in Chesterfield, so an easy drive for those of you that listen to this program and based here in St. Louis. If not, make the drive. There are doctors all over the world coming to St. Louis, Chesterfield, to visit with that trio to find out how they're keeping people in the game. It's the body's natural ability to recover and avoid surgery and get you right back on your feet or whatever the case may be. Hey, Ben, good morning to you. How are things going?
Happy Friday, Dan. I'm doing well. Hope you're lined up for a good weekend. And, yeah, plenty to discuss, man. We've got that great time of the year where college football and college basketball are both going at once. And it's off-season talk for Cardinals is starting to ramp up. Blues are underway, playing well. It's and a little Rams news too. So always good to update folks on the relocation drama.
Well, let's start right there. What's going on with the Rams?
Well, for folks who are following the national headlines now, there's been multiple reports now of Stan Kroenke's shot down settlement offer. And it's funny, you know, we initially heard maybe it was $1 billion or more, and then maybe it was less than that. And then the latest from a report from Front Office Sports that said, well, maybe it was $100 million. Well, I don't know what it was. I do think there was an offer that was turned down. But it's funny to me, Dan, how all these numbers, whether they're real or not real, are starting to get out now when there's a protective order in this case. And, you know, the NFL was the side of this lawsuit that drastically and was really passionately arguing for a protective order because it wanted all the secrets to remain the secrets. Yet here are national outlets reporting what they believe to be settlement offers from Stan Kroenke to make this thing go away. I can tell you they're not coming from the St. Louis side of things. So it's always ironic when the side that very much wanted everything to be under wraps is would sure seem to be leaking some of these numbers. $100 million, not going to get it done. But if Stan Kroenke is serious about wanting to settle this thing, if he's really feeling pressure from owners to settle it, then he's going to have to come to St. Louis and bring his checkbook and bring a lot more than $100 million.
What is the number? Is there one in mind, you think?
Well, I don't know that they have a, if we get to this, we stand down number. It's not the lawyers involved in this case that will be deciding that. It'll be the city, the county, the Dome Authority, their leaders. They're the plaintiffs in this case. So the lawyers present the offers and it's up to the plaintiffs to decide what gets it done. But it's funny to me, you got to go back to when this was first filed. And, you know, when this case was filed, first of all, the league laughed, brushed it off as a non-starter, something that would not work. It was even ridiculed here locally at times where, people said, this is sour grapes. This is just going to be a waste of money. I remember thinking when it was filed, well, I hope it works. And, hey, it'd be great if it could get the $18 million they spent on a rigged, what turned out to be a rigged process of trying to keep the Rams. It'd be great if they could get that back. And here they are with a case that's seeking billions of dollars worth in damages and punitive damages that it has enough goods lined up where I think they feel comfortable saying no to the first settlement offer. So will it be $1 billion? I don't know. I don't know if there's a number where it says, hey, if they get there, they'll table the trial. But I know it's going to have to be big enough that that it convinces them that it's not worth, you know, the small risk that would be incorporated with the trial. I think they feel like they got a pretty good case. And I think that they're going to have to turn that $100 million offer into a much bigger one for there to be something to talk about.
I think it's fascinating that they started this process by saying, okay, it's kind of a thorn in Stan's side, and now we're talking not millions, but billions potentially, and maybe well above $1 billion. I just find it fascinating that it's gotten to this point.
Well, there have been a lot of people who have been talking about this case who don't really understand how airtight it is. And, you know, Bob Blitz and Jim Bennett and Ed Dowd, these guys in these law firms, that, you know, Chris Bauman, they deserve credit for putting together a heck of a case, one that has gotten stronger, not weaker, as time has went along. It has not fallen apart at the seams. It's gotten stronger. It has overcome every attempt from the Rams and the NFL to derail it, to throw speed bumps down in front of it. They planned out their discovery. the way they went about getting information, getting depositions, getting financials, getting phone records, those that discovery process played a part in the NFL turning in on each other and having this infighting that we're seeing now. So it was all calculated, so they deserve credit. There's no victory laps to take until there's a final outcome here. But I tell you what, there's a hearing coming in early December that will decide if the owners that did not adequately provide enough financial information for potential punitive damages are going to be held in contempt of court. And if they are, if they don't satisfy the judge's request by then and handing over certain financial information, then they're really going to be risking their chance to push back on punitive damages if assigned them when this goes to trial in January. So if you're desperate to get this thing settled, you would think you would want to maybe really come up with your best offer before that arrives in early December. Then you get to the trial. If that doesn't work and you can't find a settlement, then you're talking about a trial going head-to-head with the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. So these settlement talks are, there's something to this, and I think they're probably going to ramp up before that hearing that will decide once and for all if the judge is going to say, look, you guys did not comply with the request for financial information, so don't come crying to me if you get hit with big punitives because we gave you plenty of chances. That hearing comes in early December, so I think we're going to see this thing really start to ramp up before then.
Just seems like St. Louis, through it all, just kind of wants to see this thing finish out. You know, again, we don't know the number that it would be for them to accept it, but it just seems like the appetite is there by the St. Louis group to say, we're going to see this whole thing out.
Well, I think they're more than comfortable going to trial, Dan. I do think that if this conversation about a settlement starts to evolve and the money starts to get bigger, then, you know, the plaintiffs involved they're the ones who have to decide, is it better to take a check and take the money in hand, get it now, and not have to fight it out over what could be, you know, a lengthy legal process and appeals process that could follow. That's a decision that's going to be hard to make. I don't envy the people who will ultimately have to make that decision if it becomes a harder one to make. Right now, I think it's easy. If it's $100 million, if that's true, then you say see in court and can't wait to see in court. If that number gets bigger, substantially bigger, and it's one check versus having to haggle over it in appeals after a trial, then that conversation becomes harder. But what I go back to is the fact that if you get something big out of this, and it sure seems like that's a likely outcome now one way or the other, it was worth pursuing. And that was when it started. I don't think everybody felt that way. I remember saying, hey, I don't know if this will work, but I think it's worth a shot. And I know there are a lot of other people who said, look, this is not worth chasing. I think it's very, very clear now that it absolutely was, no matter where it is.
Absolutely. I want to stick with football. Mizzou has got South Carolina this weekend. What do you think, Mizzou and South Carolina?
Well, I think it's a game where initially going into the season, you thought, hey, this is a game Missouri should win. Not so much, kind of a coin flip scenario now, because Missouri's defense has been disappointing. They've got questions at quarterback. You know, we still don't know if Connor Bazelak will be back. Could be another mix of Cook and Macon for the Tigers. And South Carolina, to credit under Coach Beamer, has done a great job. He seems like absolutely the right hire there, and he's fired them up. They're coming off of a big win against a downtrodden Florida team, but for them that's huge. So how will they respond? How will they travel? Will they be, you know, roaring after that win, or will they be distracted? I don't know, but kind of a toss-up game and a huge game for both of these teams. They both really want to get to a bowl game. Missouri could be up against it if they lose this game to try to find some salvaging of the season in the bowl game. The question for me, Dan, is we saw, if you're an optimistic-minded person, perhaps some signs of some defensive progress against Georgia, even in the loss. They were tougher. The Tigers were against the run. Georgia had to lean on the pass a little bit more than we thought. If they can build that into, you know, just an okay defense and really force teams to try to beat them through the air, then they will have a shot. I think Eli has to use both of these quarterbacks, these backups. If Bazelak can't go, if he can, then that puts the Tigers in a much better spot. They need him out there.
Okay, and let's talk a little bit then about what's happening in Carlsbad, California. Switching gears here, and that is the GM meetings. Anything catch your attention off the GM meetings, whether it's just the entirety of the sport or if you're looking at what the Cardinals are thinking about doing moving forward? Anything that was said by John Mozeliak or Michael Gersh?
Well, I enjoyed Scott Boras's annual comments, a prelude to the winter meetings, if you will.
He's a better writer, man.
His best lines in because he fears there might not be winter meetings, Dan. I wonder if he's fearing a lockout situation there. But in terms of the Cardinals, certainly sounds like pitching is the primary focus right now, and easy to understand why. I mean, that was kind of the part that he wrote it a little bit on the Cardinals last season. They made some shrewd moves to bulk it up, and it paid dividends. So they want to start this season in a better place in terms of the rotation and the bullpen. You know, it's interesting to hear the initial comments about shortstop. And I understand what John Mozeliak's doing here. Look, whether you're looking for a shortstop or not, you're not going to come out at GM meetings and devalue your shortstop who you could look to trade or rebound, whatever way they go with Paul DeJong. So he's trying to pump up Paul DeJong. He's trying to, you know, make the case that they could have multiple guys to kind of bounce around the middle infield. You throw in Sosa into that, Edmund. You don't know what Nolan Gorman's going to be able to do next year, but you're clearly encouraged by how things went for him in the Arizona Fall League and in Memphis before he got kind of shut down early with that hopefully minor hamstring injury. So it didn't shock me that they're not coming out and selling themselves as shortstop pursuers. I do think that the Cardinals are going to monitor that market. I think they have to. There's so many guys available. Not all of them are Corey Seager and Correa. There's going to be more affordable shortstops. There could be guys looking to take maybe a bounce back pillow deal, maybe a guy like Trevor Story, who they've had interest in the past. So I do think they'll continue to monitor that, but it sure sounds like pitching is their focus for now. And also, too, they're understanding what every team understands. This offseason could get weird. I think a lockout is pretty much expected at this point, and there could be a flurry of moves made after, hopefully, that ends entering spring training. So I think the Cardinals, you know, you want to keep tabs on their shortstop conversation, but right now they're kind of positioning themselves on the outside of it looking in. If they're going to go pitching, I like the makeup of a guy like Marcus Stroman. He gets a ton of ground balls. He throws strikes. I think he'd look really good in front of this defense. But the good thing about what the Cardinals have found in pitching, Dan, is they don't need the biggest names. They just need guys who throw strikes, keep the ball on the ground, and let this defense do its job.
So then are you comfortable with a combination or one or the other of DeJong and Sosa? DeJong is owed $15 million over the next 2 years, guaranteed. Combination or one or the other going into spring training that you think has the edge?
Well, I think Paul's a better player, a better hitter than we've seen from him this year. I do think that. My question is if the Cardinals can figure out how to unlock what they've had from him in the past. In the past three seasons, don't scream that. So you want to know what's going to be different, right? And I know he had the rib injury this year, COVID the year before. So maybe just a fully healthy season will unlock better performance. I think Sosa proved he can be a more than just a bench guy. And it sounds like Ollie Marmol has, you know, allowed the idea and promoted the idea of moving guys around, of playing the splits, playing the platoons. If Nolan Gorman is ready, you know, you have Tommy Edman who can play some short. Maybe it's four guys for two spots. Maybe that's how they end up going about it. It invites risk, though, Dan. I mean, we're talking about a second base and shortstop combination that despite all the awesome things Tommy Edman did offensively, those were two of their lowest producing spots in the lineup this year, shortstop and second base. And this is the year, the offseason of the shortstop with all of the guys moving, guys who are going to get paid a ton of money, guys who are going to end up probably having to settle for less than they think they deserve because of the way that the offseason is structured with so many talented players. We know that there's always a top and then a system that builds down from there. So there's going to be somebody who ends up taking less. I mean, a guy like Javier Baez, who might be kind of viewed as a top available shortstop, no one's even talking about him. And I'm not saying he's the right fit for the Cardinals, but to me, with the guys available and the guys that are going to get traded to make room for these guys, I just am not quite ready to buy it when I hear from the Cardinals saying they think their starting positions are set. I think you're asking a lot of this offense to have everyone do what they did last year and then also have the middle infield guys produce better. Because we know, just like the Cardinals, you know, their faith in their pitching depth last season, things don't always work out. Injuries happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing a little bit of hedging, a little bit of spin on the shortstop thing. I'm curious to see if that changes as as we start to see what the market looks like for some of these guys and start to see what some of the off-season shenanigans, the CBA shenanigans, could lead to in the market. If guys have to start scrambling for deals, the Cardinals could be there potentially with a position to make some moves.
Our guest, as always on a Friday, is Ben Fredrickson, presented by Blue Tail Medical Group, great alternative to surgery. I want to stay on the baseball front here. Are there any names out there that tickle your fancy, Ben, that you say, yeah, that's a good fit, great defense with the Cardinals, big ballpark, that's a good fit for St. Louis?
Max Scherzer, I still love that idea. I think that would be awesome to see. But, you know, I'm a Scherzer fanboy. I'll admit that. To me, the Seager and Correa stuff, I don't put a lot of stock into it because the Cardinals, you know, and rightfully so a lot of times, have been on the spot where they don't really like to be on the front edge of those free agent bidding wars where you're talking like decade-long contracts. Both of those guys have pretty, you know, noteworthy injury histories. And the Cardinals have made more of their big splash additions through trades and look-wise because of it. So I don't focus as much on those guys, but a guy like Marcus Semien, I think, could make sense. He really pounded right-handed pitching last season, although he's a right-handed hitter. The Cardinals have had that interest in Trevor Story before, Dan. I don't know what you think. He had a weird year last year. But the Cardinals, you know who also didn't have a great year their last year in Colorado? Nolan Arenado. And Story's been a pretty good player and the Cardinals have had interest in him in the past. They did check in on him at the last trade deadline. So I'm not quite ready to say, hey, that's dead and gone just yet. Especially if he winds up being one of those guys who looks for kind of that rebound type contract, I think that there could be potentially a fit there. So those are the names that kind of jump out right away. And then you start to look at, you know, pitchers who get ground balls, who throw strikes, and maybe some guys who pitch left-handed. There could be a lot of teams selling off, so there may be some names that don't jump out, but the Cardinals have been pretty good about finding fits pitching-wise for this defense, and I think we'll see some things like that too.
A fit for the coaching staff, Skip Schumacher. He's back in St. Louis. What did you think?
I love it. A great get by the Cardinals. They needed somebody to provide that, some of that been there, done that in the dugout. You know, you don't have to have a manager who played. I think sometimes it's overrated, but you better have somebody in there who has some of that. And Skip brings that, but not simply, hey, I played, so therefore I know. He's into the analytics. He's into, you know, modern way of doing things. And I think he's on the short track to be a manager himself. So I'll also say this. I think it tells you something about Ali Marmol to not only be open to this idea, but recruit Skip for it. You know, some managers, and we've seen this in any sport, some guys don't like to have somebody on their staff who could be viewed potentially as a threat or a guy who's next in line, whether it's here or somewhere else. And I think Ali's approach is like, hey, let's go get the best guys we can get. We think we need this guy. So I think that tells you a little bit about what Ali's going to be about. So should be a good fit. It's going to be fun to see how that works for Skip being the bench coach with guys he played with. But, you know, Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina are thrilled. And you know that there's going to be a sharp, smart voice there with some real major league experience. I think that helps this team.
SLU will host Eastern Illinois tonight, and that's at Chaffetz Arena. I'll the call with Scott Highmark on Bally Sports Midwest will come your way at 7. Everybody's tipped off. The Illini, we've seen SLU, we've seen Mizzou. Anything stand out for you with those three teams in this first week?
Pretty good starts for everybody so far. I mean, SLU's scoring like a million points a game, so I like the way they play. The tempo looks good. I like the way Yuri Collins has started. Man, he's going to be – I think he might lead the nation in assists this year, so I'm going to be keeping tabs on that. And I like that he's scoring too. They're going to need that with Javonte out, so good start there. Good start for Mizzou, getting all of the newcomers in. They got to get Deshaun Gordon going here now that he's got that bogus NCAA one-game suspension out of the way. But thought you saw some good things from the returners there, Javon Pickett, but also the new guys, Amari Davis, Boogie Coleman, you know, Ronnie DeGray. They all made positive first impressions in their start. I don't know much about that team. We don't, because it's so new, but you like the first impression there. They're going to play with a high level of effort, and they're more athletic than they have been in the past. Illinois, good start, but we haven't seen their best guys play yet. Kofi's got to get in after that bogus NCAA suspension. They got to get Curbelo going. They're going to be a very good team, but we haven't seen their best players yet. So I think you're going to have some good, compelling basketball in the region here this winter.
What are you working on for this weekend in the Post-Dispatch?
I got a column up about some of this relocation drama that's playing out. We'll have the Cardinals, of course, covered. Saturday I'll be in Columbia for the South Carolina game, so check out coverage of that at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch.
Great stuff as always, Ben. We're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group, and we'll catch you up next Friday.
Sounds good, brother. Talk to you soon.